saying they stand to gain as little as $39 billion. That chump change. And no more than $279. No more than $279 billion over 75 years.
Ooh.
But that estimate comes from a study sponsored by the Security Industry Association, which stands to benefit from privatization and lists an agenda almost identical to President Bush's. Here's the deal. A study published by the University of Chicago predicted Wall Street could collect $940 billion or more over 75 years, an amount the study called the largest windfall in American financial history. That's what he's doing with your money. The idea that it's a 401k, believe me, 401ks can lose money. Ask those people that had their 401ks through their work invested in funds that had Enron as a... as an investment. Ask those people, you know, who lost, you know, their entire futures because they thought that they were solid. All right? And this is the bottom line is privatization doesn't work. All right? Decades of conservative marketing have convinced Americans that government programs always create bloated bureaucracies, while the private sector is always lean and efficient. But when it comes to retirement security, the opposite is true. More than 99% of Social Security's revenues go toward benefits and less than 1% for overhead. And this is from Krugman, Paul Krugman, who we believe in and know and trust here. In Chile's system, management fees are around 20 times as high, and that's a typical number for privatized systems. In Britain, which has had a privatized system since the days of Margaret Thatcher, alarm over the large fees charged by some investment companies eventually lead government regulators to impose a charge cap. So even so, fees continue to take a large bite out of British retirement savings. So all that money that they think they're going to be saving is going to go into broker fees.
Well, they'll make more money than the trial lawyers that Bush hates so much.
So let's talk about tort reform, or as we like to call it, thanks to our guest yesterday, Dan Ziegert, who is a reporter on these issues, on tort issues. Can we hear that sound, Chris, from Dan?
The actual costs of medical malpractice to the medical system, and I'm talking about all the costs, including what it costs to hire the lawyers, including what it costs to buy the insurance policies, including what it costs to do so-called, quote-unquote, defensive medicine, is less than 2% of health care spending. That's not obviously driving health care costs, 2%. And as far as the cost of businesses, just why we were talking about small businesses, it's less than one-half of 1%. It's barely measurable.
So how do we reframe this issue to put it back in their face?
Well, instead of talking about tort, quote-unquote, reform, let's call it what it is. Let's call it victims' rights restrictions.
Let's do that then. Let's call it what it is. We will call it not tort reform. We will call it restricting victims' rights, Mark Riley.
Well, what we've got here is a circle of George W. Bush's initiatives for his second term. Tax cuts, changes to Social Security, Iraq, I don't want to call it tort reform now. You've jinxed me.
Restricting victims' rights.
Yeah, that too. And, of course, the missing piece in the puzzle, domestic spending.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess what's going to have to be cut in order to make all this stuff happen for George W. Bush, in order to make those tax cuts permanent, in order to fund the $2 trillion it's going to take to make the transition to private Social Security accounts. All of this stuff is going to have to be paid for by something. And Bush, during the campaign, wouldn't tell anybody how he was going to fund it.
What does that fall under? What falls under domestic spending, Mark?
Everything.
Okay, you're talking
everything
about
except for the military and domestic security. Everything else is on the board.
What are you talking about? Infrastructure maintenance, public schools,
education, health care, mm-hmm. government subsidized health care, all of these things, Medicaid, Medicare, all of them are going to be on the table for cuts. Bush is now talking about the deepest domestic spending cuts and in some cases freezes on spending.
They're trying to starve the country to force everything to be privatized. Is that what's going on?
Well, that's part of it. But remember, too, that while all this is going on, we're not hearing a mumbling word about how much they're going to have to spend on Iraq. That'll come sometime after Bush's inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
And see, what's going to have to happen is he's going to jump up and say, wait a minute, we don't have enough money here. How are we going to deal with this? We're going to freeze the education spending. Forget transportation or housing or any of the other gut bucket issues that a lot of Americans do have a concern about. He will be freezing all of those domestic programs except Homeland Security. That he will continue to spend money on. And remember, once you freeze it, you end up losing because of the cost of living increases.
So it just sounds to me like what they're doing is they're bleeding the country of everything, and that's going to be their method of making the economy work again, is if they bleed it of everything on those levels, on the domestic programs, okay, mm-hmm. and they keep, you know, funneling all this money into Iraq, it's going to force, you know, big business to step in and take up the slack at the cost of us.
Well, the other thing is that there's a political motivation behind this. This appeals very strongly to the most conservative members in Congress. Bush is now laying out some favors for them, talking about these freezes, and all these guys who criticized him during the first term for overspending are now saying, what a wonderful guy he is. He'll pick up that particular IOU in about a year and a half.
Well, let's talk about restricting victims' rights on that level. You know, I mean, the bottom line with tort reform.
That's a good way of putting it. Tort reform.
It is. Well, what they're trying to do, they're trying to, you know, make insinuations that the reason, you know, medical insurance is up and everything is up in those areas is because of these, you know, these
frivolous lawsuits,
which our guest says and many other people have said isn't true. That doesn't even account for 1% of the cost. The reason that that healthcare costs are so high is because insurance companies just decide to jack it up because of their own investments or because of some of the escalating hospital costs and whatnot. But it's got nothing to do with malpractice suits.
Let's ask a question about what's frivolous. Here's an interesting point. One of the guests at Bush's Economic Summit is the CEO of none other than Home Depot, of which 94% of their campaign contributions, by the way, went to Bush and the Republicans. Now, in September of 2000 in Texas, a NASA astronaut, Jean-Luc Chrétien, was hit by a 68-pound drill press that fell from a shelf 10 feet above him.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to settle that lawsuit.
Right.
Is that the kind of frivolous lawsuit they're talking about? This guy can no longer participate in the space program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, do we have Borzu? Is Borzu Dargahi going to be on the phone next segment or not? He is? Because
uh-huh.
I wanted to go through, like, you know, that apparently the CEO of Home Depot, Robert Nardelli, and President Bush were just, you know, sitting around laughing. They were taking shots at trial lawyers.
Yeah.
And that was the big joke there. You know, they were saying things like, Nardelli said, what you have today is business on one side, and you've got trial lawyers on the other side. You've got deep pockets colliding with shallow principles. Now, Home Depot, first of all, you know, I don't think we have time to go into this right now. We want to hear from Borzu in Iraq. I mean, Home Depot is one of these big corporate criminals in the way that if they make malpractice insurance, or if they make malpractice suits, if they were able to put caps on it, that means that whatever a corporation is guilty of as far as safety liabilities, they can just integrate into their bottom line and not make any changes, because if they're sued, you know, it doesn't matter. They can only go so high.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were sitting around laughing at the fact that they want to restrict victims' rights. And this is, you know, Home Depot in Santa Monica, California, November 1999. Mary Margaret Penturf was hit by a 75-pound box of wood that fell from a shelf 20 feet above. 79-year-old Penturf bled to death on the floor with a fatal head wound. I wonder if Nardelli's laughing at that with Bush. Twin Falls, Idaho, May 2000. 2,000 pounds of kitchen countertops fell about 10 feet from a forklift that was moving them, crushing 3-year-old Janessa Horner. She died 4 hours later at a local hospital. Danbury, Connecticut, July 4, 2000, 41-year-old Jerry Mead and his brother were hit by 2,000 pounds of falling landscaping timbers. Jerry Mead was killed and his brother was seriously injured. Yeah, this is hilarious stuff. So all of these people would be denied their rights to, you know, get their justice for this, you know, ineptitude or this lack of safety when these Home Depot. This is just the stores. This is not even dealing with the hundreds of lawsuits against them for products that they sell that aren't, you know, labeled properly or unsafe. You know, if they put caps on this stuff, it has nothing to do with people getting their justice. It has nothing to do with correcting things that are unsafe about, you know, corporate crime.
Well, remember that this is also carrying water for his friends. Bush ended up, he was the beneficiary of a $3.2 million fundraiser that Robert Nardelli, CEO of Home Depot, gave at his house in May of this year.
They give almost like, you know, 94% of their money to the Republican Party. And, you know, Nardelli, you know, is a super ranger for Bush. He's
yep.
raised, you know, over $500,000. And they used to have a thing where Home Depot executives and employees would donate money until they stopped that. But the issue really is, the restricting victims' rights, is that the reason, you know, tort reform is bad is because people will not get justice, number one, for themselves, and corporate crime will never be, you know, prosecuted. It will never be stopped because they'll be able to incorporate into their bottom line and get away with it, knowing that even if people get hurt or die, it's not going to cost them that much. Restricting victims' rights. We'll be back with Borzu Daragahi, who's in Baghdad, with an update for us. It's 46 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Check out all our favorite links, our latest blog entries, and our new line of merchandise at morningsedition.com.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's our last day here. We're going on vacation for a week. Mark's going for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But listen to our show because we've been, you know, spending the whole week, you know, backlogging not only classic stuff in different forms. Like we got, you know, full hours of comedy. We've got, you know, a lot of guest interviews that we did that have never been aired specifically for next week. A lot of holiday stuff. And excuse me, Mark Riley. Hey, how far away is my cough button? But so I suggest you listen to that. If you want to go to our website now at morningsedition.com, a fan of our show, Dave Counts, who I met up in Boston for the first time, who designed our logo on the website, has animated our Christmas dream diary. And it's pretty funny.
It's good.
It's pretty
well
great.
Done.
So why don't you,
except I still look fat,
you
Dave.
Not. You look muscular. You look muscular.
I look like a bouncer, for God's sake.
This poor guy goes out of his way.
I'm only kidding.
Feel guilty the first time. Like,
happy holidays,
fat.
Dave.
He made you all tight at the waist. You look like a superhero.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
All right, muscles. So on the phone from Baghdad is one of our favorite reporters to give us an update. We tried to get him the other day, but I think he had there were things going on. But he's on the phone with us now. Good morning, Borzu Daragahi. How are you?
Good morning to you guys. How are you doing?
All
good.
Right, Borzu.
How does it feel to be back in Iraq after your honeymoon?
I just can't explain what a, you know, welcoming and wonderful place it is.
Yeah, just they blew some people up just to welcome you back.
So, exactly, yeah.
Now, we were trying to speculate on that. Now, the bodyguard of al-Sistani, who was killed in that explosion the other day, there are two questions I have. Were they gunning for Sistani, and who did it?
I think actually it was a little bit more elevated than a bodyguard. I mean, it was a cleric who's one of his deputies, his chief guy in Karbala, which is a pretty important city in Iraq. I don't know if they were, I doubt that they were gunning for Sistani because Sistani wasn't around. Sistani was in Najaf at the time. But that's a really good question, you know, and that's one of the things that a lot of people have been worrying about and wondering about is, you know, including the interim government and the U.S. Officials here, are the insurgents kind of use the tensions of the election, the natural tensions that come out in any election period, you know, where different factions, they get a little bit more heated, a little bit more rhetorically angry at each other. Are they going to use that increased tension to drag the country into some kind of sectarian war?
But at what point do we stop just calling this, do we stop using the word insurgency as some sort of broad definition for a lot of different factions and start to assess the real political dynamics of this resistance? Because, you know, obviously it probably wasn't jihadists who killed him. It was most likely, you know, ex-Baathists or people that are rallying against, you know, his contingent in the government, correct?
I mean, it might be ex-Baathists. I presume that it's ex-Baathists, former IIS, Iraqi intelligence service types, who are embittered and they've lost so much and they really have nothing else to lose. So we're just going to make sure the whole ship goes down with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that that's who's behind this kind of thing. I mean, the question is, are they going to be able to hold out? You know, this thing is not going to go away. I mean, the U.S. occupation force made such fundamental errors in its failure to co-opt or adapt to or somehow include these people in its post-war planning, that this is not ever going to go away. It's a question of, can you sort of transition the what you have now into something that's kind of workable? You know, I mean, But look at Spain. You know, I mean, how many decades has it been that the group ETA goes on with its bombings and stuff like that? It doesn't threaten to destabilize the whole region. You know, it doesn't the whole Iberian Peninsula. And that's the ideal you can possibly get to if you have a successful election and you go to a real government that, you know, enough of the people trust.
Mm-hmm. Borzu, where are the Sunnis at this point? I mean, we hear conflicting reports here. Obviously, there are some Sunnis that are calling for a straight-up boycott. There are others that are talking about participating. Which is it going to be for the Sunnis?
I think it's complicated. I think that, like, the ordinary people, whether Sunni or Shia, the Arab Sunnis or Arab Shias, they all kind of generally want to vote, want to participate in general, but they're just so afraid. You know, I was talking to one guy who's a Sunni Arab, and he was saying to me, you know, how can I take my family to vote in this security situation where I'm afraid that I'm going to get strafed by machine gun fire, you know? And that's in Baghdad,
wow.
You know?
Wow.
Imagine some poor family living in the Sunni Triangle out in the countryside where you don't have the media spotlight and so on. You know, they're not going to dare go out and vote.
Right. Hey, Borzu, you know, thanks for the update. We'll call you next week. We got to get out of here right now. It's great talking to you.
Thanks, Borzu.
We got to stay on top of this because it's heating up in a whole new way there. There's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, call Rob Reiner. Pitch this idea. Dick Cheney is Scrooge with puppets. Two, replace door-to-door caroling with door-to-door Chomsky. That might could work. Three, arrange the light display on your roof to read, mandate my ass. Four, watch It's a Wonderful Life and then wonder what it would be like if George W. Bush had never been born. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Yeah, kid, democracy's nearly dead. We have a madman in office, and global warming's going to destroy us all in 5 years. But, hey, enjoy your My Little Pony celebration castle. Wake up, kid. Time is running out, man.
The Dream Diary's coming up here on Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah, all right. Good morning, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, and Mark Ryan people.
Where?
I'm not gonna call anybody any names this morning. We're not gonna have any fun like that because it's the holiday season.
Yeah.
All right, and we're having this conversation here about iPods.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have one. Because as I said before, I have a principle. That was I talking about that on the air or off the air the other day? My ridiculous new idea. It's not so new. I don't wear headphones anymore. Was I talking about that on the air? No. You know that I was talking about, like, you know, how I don't like if I'm at the gym, I want to hear gym sounds. I want to be in the present, right? I want to be in the present on the train. I want to be. We talked about that, yeah. But Riley here is like, he's like, what's the biggest gig on the iPod? We said 40 gigabytes, right? That's
yeah.
I didn't know, but I know because my wife wants one.
Right? Okay,
I
gotta there go. You go.
I'll be buying one in the next few days, right? So Riley goes. He goes, how many songs is that? I go, 10,000 songs. He goes, that's only 1,000 records.
Yeah, it's 1,000 albums. That ain't that much.
Yeah, but
I got more than that at home.
It's a lot to put in your pocket.
No, I would buy an iPod if I could say, let me hear Ballerina by Van Morrison, and I could hear it. Then I'd have a use for an iPod. Otherwise, I can do it myself.
You mean you want to talk to the thing? You want
to? I want to be able to talk to it and hear the music. And then it'll be worth something to me. Otherwise, I can do it manually.
Would you like to go? Are you sure? You sure that's the one you want to hear?
No. Just do it.
Yeah, but Riley, I think you're rationalizing your fear of technology.
I don't have a fear of technology. I have about 4,000 CDs in my house.
All right. Well, let's talk about. All right. So what do you? So you get four iPods. Okay?
I don't want four. Right,
okay,
the transfer time alone wouldn't be worth it.
Okay, wait. So how many, out of those 4,000 CDs, how many CDs do you just listen to two or three songs on?
Not that many.
Oh, come on.
Not that many. Because I have stuff of, I have soca. You got any soca music in your collection, pal? Huh?
Are
you got any Black Stalin?
Are you afraid of the fast forward?
No. There's certain songs I like. There are albums that I have, and I've had them for 10 years, and I haven't heard everything on them. I go back and listen.
I hear you.
That's what I do. I majored in music in college.
I know. I'm not trying to get you upset, but I just want to ask you, okay, how many albums are you bringing to England for 2 weeks? How many CDs?
No, 208.
Okay, so 208 CDs. That must weigh about 30 pounds.
So?
So, an iPod weighs about 6 ounces. And you just
I don't have to take it. It takes me less time to fill up that thing than it would take me to dub all the stuff off my CD onto an iPod.
Oh. Yeah,
too much time.
But you only have to do it once.
Who cares?
Hey, listen to me. I'm arguing because I don't have one. You know, I don't want one. I like getting y'all worked up about something.
I don't have one and I don't want one. A CD player and a collection of CDs will always be good enough for me.
But the only benefit of that is you get to look at the pictures when
I don't carry the album art.
You don't carry any of it?
More CDs. More room for more CDs.
I got the same thing you. I got like 500 or 600 CDs in cases, and they're sitting at home in L.A., and now I got to go through them because I want to bring Pashman some stuff he doesn't have. You know, Pashman's
right?
He's got very specific music taste, you know. But I have some stuff.
Me too. I got 12 hours of flight time to kill, and I don't like to repeat myself. So I always bring enough CDs so that I can listen for 6 solid hours worth of music without ever repeating anything.
Wow.
A period.
You're running
a radio show.
Well, imagine if you could listen to 10,000 songs without repeating anything, just sitting there. Imagine that.
How would I find them all?
Well, I'd have to
categorize everything.
No, it categorizes itself. Kalo, tell them that the name comes up on there and everything.
The artist name comes up. You can scroll through it. It's very convenient.
Scroll through 10,000 songs.
Albums comes up.
That's what I mean.
You can
all I
got
to do is reach into the thing and say, okay, here it is. Here's Franz Liszt. I put the thing in. I hit the number. Bam, I got the music. What's the problem?
There's no problem. No one's saying it's a problem. We're just saying you're backward.
Well, I'll be backwards for this. It's music.
But who am I to talk? I've given up entirely. I don't even have a portable CD anymore. I play CDs in my DVD player now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I haven't got anything. I haven't got anything I can stick headphones in. When I go to the gym, occasionally I watch CNN through their stupid little TV show. What the hell happened to me?
But see, that's the other problem I got with iPods. I don't like those buds, the earbuds that go in your ear. I like stuff over the ear, not in the ear. That is backwards.
But, dude, they're available. You can plug any earphone. What do you think? It's limited?
Yeah.
You can get those.
I don't see nobody walking around with an iPod with Sennheiser headphones on it.
I do. Yeah, you see them.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
I see people with those little earbuds. I hate that.
Yeah. The little plug-in earphones?
Yeah. Can't
I like those better.
No, I can't listen.
What do you, why?
Because first of all, it concentrates too much sound in your ear canal. I like to have it over.
Mm-hmm.
It resonates. For me, it resonates better.
So your head shakes a little bit? You get the whole buzz in your head?
No, plus analog music, which a lot of the stuff I listen to was recorded originally in analog. It sounds better when it's over your ear than in your ear.
Yeah, well, you know, personally, the only music that I'll listen to is stuff played from sheet music live.
Well, there you go. I have friends that do that.
Yeah.
I have friends that want to hear the music exactly as it was recorded, period.
Hey, you don't got to tell me, man. I got a bunch of reel-to-reel tapes waiting for me at home.
There you go.
I'm going to get in some
now spirit. You're going back to the future, pal.
Oh, here we go. You know, please, let me just tell the people, we are leaving, as you can tell. We're giddy and excited and ready to go. But next week, all of our programs are going to be unique in the fact that every show next week is hosted by Mark and I in a separate reality that we've put together for you. We've got like hour-long chunks of comedy back-to-back. We've got some of our best interviews that we've had on the show. But we also lined up a bunch of interviews that have never been aired specifically for next week's program. We had a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm. Had a lot of fun.
We got some with Judy Gold, George Lakoff, Alan Richman is back, Barry Lynn for a revisit.
But you know what? It wouldn't have meant anything if Kalo and Brendan hadn't really put it all together technically so it sounds like a coherent whole.
I didn't do anything.
Kayla just said he didn't do anything.
All right, well, then later for you.
Well, but let's must say that Brendan certainly did leave us those scripts when he went away, and we got all those, and those were genius. And when we were in the other room right through that window right there recording those things, Kayla was in here doing the other show with us, supporting us that way. Every once in a while, I'd look over at Kayla, and he'd look at me like, oh, no. But
there you go.
What are you talking about? Moving on.
Brian. Yeah.
No, I meant, you know what I mean, Kayla. I'm not saying anything bad about anybody. I just was like, you were sad that you couldn't be with us in the other room. Because look at us. We're having a great time, aren't we?
Yeah, throwing things.
He's all nervous now. He's all nervous. What's Christmas? It's going to be a fun Christmas in Staten Island.
Oh, here we go again with the Shaolin diss.
Nothing. Every day we talk about news stories that reflect the poopy job President Bush is doing and just how rapidly our world is swirling down the crapper. Despite the fact that we have 3 hours every day, we can't get to it all. So here's a quick rundown of just some of the stories we weren't able to get to today, representing just a partial 24-hour snapshot of the George Bush storm. All right, Scripps Howard News Service headline, Children of the Fallen. Almost 900 American children have lost a parent in Iraq. Among them is 14-year-old Jack Schoenberger, who said, quote, I don't want to be 4-year-old. What did I say?
14.
Four-year-old Jack Schoenberger, who said, quote, I don't want to be a daddy because daddies die. End quote. New York Times headline, Guard reports serious drop in enlistment. The Army National Guard announced that enlistment levels have dropped 30% below recruiting goals in the last 2 months and has gotten so bad they will now offer enlistment incentives of $15,000 and armor.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Body armor, the guarantee of a truck that might have the proper armaments. New York Times. Of course, what, are they surprised that it's down?
Yeah, right.
New York Times headline, clamor grows in the private debate. The privatization debate. At his two-day policy summit, President Bush introduced a single mom, Sandra Jacques, as one of the many regular people who support his Social Security giveaway. President Bush failed to mention that Sandra Jacques is also that Iowa State Director of Freedom Works, a conservative
advocacy group.
Ugh.
And several others, including, what is it, Save Our Grandparents?
Well, the Alliance of This and
yeah,
the Family
Back,
and everybody's good who believes in what we do, this and that group. And Associated Press headline study, TV show's negative image of religion. Brent Bozell's Parents Television Council, one of the primary Christo-fascist zombie brigades of the neocon death cult, claims that TV is biased against religion, citing such remarks as Jimmy Kimmel's joke that music award winners should refrain from thanking God. Hey, Bozell, you got too much time on your hands, dude.
Yeah, really.
You've got a bunch of people with too much time on their hands. My God. Would you guys sit and watch a million hours of TV? Yes.
Yeah, please. Supposedly they
you
did.
Freaks.
Incredible.
What credibility do you have? We'll have more on that study, though. When we come back, it's 16 past the hour. Hey, Kayla, man, I'm sorry, man, I love you. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio. Go to our website, morningsedition.com. Watch Dave Count's animated dream diary, our Christmas dream diary. It's quite something. Guy's great. That's a guy that does constructive things with his free time.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike
the
Parents Television Council.
Oh, please.
Are these people supposed to be representing religion? For God's sakes.
Their little corner of religion.
Here we go. My therapist asked me to do my dreams. I do. I was supposed to go. Yesterday, I didn't go because I had to do Conan. I haven't talked about that. Maybe I will. Maybe I will later. But right now, here's my dream from last night. So I'm Christmas shopping at Kmart with my dead cat, Butch. And she's buying everything in sight. Chocolate reindeer and Santa hats and bright red vests with snowmen on them and plastic pine cones. And a whole cart full of, like, just holiday crap. I say, Butch, you're usually such a snob. I thought you'd hate Christmas. She says, to the contrary, Mark Maron. It is the only holiday it is the only time of year I enjoy. Look around you. Nothing but plastic and sugar and thousands of items that serve no purpose whatsoever. I say, it all does depress me, Butch. Butch says, exactly. It is excessive. It is grotesque. It is postmodern. It is decorative. It is counterintuitive. It is pagan.
A whole nation puts a tree inside the house that is pure druid.
I say it's pure something. Butch says, Mark Maron, Christmas is when an absurd nation truly embraces its absurdity. It arouses me sexually just thinking about it. I say, Butch, it's supposed to be a religious holiday. Butch says, yes, that makes it the orgasm of vulgarity twice as delicious. During Christmas, men wear plaid dinner jackets and red slacks to celebrate the birth of an Israeli infant. Is this not officially sanctioned surrealism? Oh, look, a Barbie tree angel. I say, put that back. You don't need that. Butch tosses it back in the cart and says, people at Christmas are allowed to say, I want, without first strapping on your Puritan chastity belt, Mark Maron. I say, every time someone disagrees with you, you call them Puritan. Butch says, that's because they are everywhere. This is a time for eating too much and drinking too much and smoking too much and making too much filthy love and comical holiday lingerie. Oh, look, Mannheim Steamroller Christmas album. I say, that's where I draw the line. You're not playing that in my house. Butch tosses it in the cat and says, oh, but we will, and possibly sing along to it. Come now, Mark Maron. We must go purchase sex toys for the four strays. I woke up and my bed was filled with angel hair pasta. Butch is something else, man.
Butch is a hell of a woman.
It's always nice to see her once a week. I got to tell her that we got rid of one of the strays. She's going to be upset.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's going to break her heart. But I think, you know, the mail is still there, so she'll dig it. I'm holding myself back from, going over there. I'm not going to go back over to the store, the Yemeni guy. I'm not going over
still
to
Still haven't given in yet,
I'm
huh?
not going over to Tony's until the cat, until I've detached from it effectively. Now, let's get into this. All right? Dig this. The Parents Television Council watched every hour of prime time on the broadcast network during the 2003-2004 season and logged 2,344 treatments of religion that judged 22% of the mentions positive, 24% negative, and the rest neutral. These monkeys are such idiots. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're supposed to care about religion. How many of them are there sitting there in front of TVs watching hours and hours and hours of television when they could be out actually helping people, maybe working at a soup kitchen, going to shelters, providing some sort of service in a Christian way instead of trying to decide what we should watch because they disagree with these stupid monkeys, crystal fascist zombie brigades. Nothing pisses me off more than disingenuous Christians that don't do the real Christian work, like helping people.
I would, give them some credit had they just gone to church during all this time rather than watch TV.
Unbelievable.
But see, this is a political agenda. This is part and parcel of a larger political agenda. And Brett Bozell and the Parents Television Council have had the same agenda for an awfully long time. Remember, 10 years ago, they were going against wrestling and my man Mick Foley there.
Yeah, this is counteractive, though. It's counteractive to reality, obviously, because that's what they want. Look at this. You know, Bozell, the dummy, says, quote, Catholicism is in the bullseye of the entertainment medium, unquote, because people are critical of the Catholic Church and make fun of priests because most of them were pedophiles. All right, so what are we supposed to do with that? I mean, if the reality is what it is, you can't make a couple of jokes at their expense because of the reality is just too disgusting and despicable to deal with. We can't make a couple of jokes, make light of the fact that about 75% of the priests in this country were sexually transgressive. Maybe not that much. But
not that much.
You know what I'm saying.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but Bozell is trying to counteract all of that. Bozell is trying to rein in Hollywood. This is something that they've tried, and it's so base hypocritical because they understand, Bozell understands very clearly that all of this centers around money, all of this centers around what people watch. He's got to get the people and change their viewing habits. Not trying to change Hollywood. Hollywood is reactive.
Yeah, but Hollywood is not a single entity. Hollywood is a bunch of, frightened people trying to hold on to their jobs by creating mediocre entertainment crap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hollywood is really just, a multi-tiered system of desperate people trying to displace the blame when things get screwed up and then trying to take responsibility when there's a hit. Hollywood is just just thousands of guys named Josh and Barry and, 1,400 girls named Cheryl and Julie who, stand in this like weird barricade in the form of publicists, talent executives, in the form of agents and managers that just sort of create this large barricade, all that just surrounds the Spielberg and the three or four studio heads and television executives, and it just trickles up from there. They just and then at the very bottom of it are sad, desperate, you know, comedians and actors going, I got this. This is a really funny idea. It's a reality show that takes place in my butt. All right, it's hilarious. As you know, I see it. You know, it's live in the. But you know. I'm not sure, you know, what exactly I'm saying, but you know, this Brozell guy really bothers me because after the FCC cited 159 public complaints in its legal case against Fox for the show Married by America, a Freedom of Information request showed that there were actually only 90 complaints written by 23 individuals. Of those 23, all but two were identical repetitions of a form letter posted by the Parents Television Council.
That's what they do.
Just one of the many crystal fascist zombie brigade organizations.
Yeah, and they're going to change the course of what we see if we're not careful.
In other words, the total number was three.
There you go.
Three. Three people, seeming like 159, seeming like thousands.
Yeah.
There's only a few of them, folks. We got to stop them. What do we got coming up?
We got Jimmy Massey coming up.
Oh, that should be
talking
heavy.
About war,
okay.
And the wages of war, and the Dog of the Week coming up here on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Hi. It's Air America Radio. Did I mention that already? Oh, no. Guess he's on the phone.
Uh-oh.
Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, so now on the phone once again is Planet Bush correspondent, Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a Christmas tree, and he's hanging you from the highest branch.
Oh, now, is that even a nice thing to say?
Where I come from, it is.
Today, we're going to talk about the politicization of Christmas.
That's Lawton. A good topic, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
The assault on our sacred traditions has been unconscionable.
Oh, come on.
It's like Christmas is Poland, and you secular left-wingers are Adolf Hitler Clinton.
What does that even mean? That is harsh, dude. Aren't you being just a tad bit alarmist? And don't you think the state and church should stay separate, my friend?
Oh, church, Mark. State and church, sturch. We've discussed it. Use the word. You'll enjoy it, pal.
Uh-huh.
And the official spokesman of the sturch is the sweet little baby Jesus.
Look, my friend, religious organizations are boycotting Macy's for replacing Merry Christmas signs with season greetings and Happy Holiday signs. I mean, come on. That's absurd, Lawton, isn't it?
Mark, is it absurd to miss seeing the signs we always used to see in our youth? I mean, signs like Merry Christmas, Praise the Lord, or Whites Only.
Well, come on, come
on. It sickens me to watch these traditions vanish right in front of me.
Yeah, look, Lawton, listen. The last time I looked, Christmas was as big as ever. And don't you think it's hard to make the case that something that still plays such a huge part in our economy is, quote-unquote, under siege?
It is under siege, Mark. The baby Jesus most definitely locked down in a panic room right now.
Come on.
But I have a solution.
What?
I have turned the national anthem into a Christmas carol.
Oh, no.
A hymn to the sturch, if you like.
No, I wouldn't go there if I were.
Well,
please.
I'm going there right now.
No, please.
Oh, say, can you see by the Lord's early light?
No.
What so proudly we hailed at the birth of Jesus Christ.
Oh, come on, God, help us.
Come on, stop it, man.
No.
Save your head and pray.
Wait. Jesus wore spangles?
Oh, no. And the King of
come on.
The Jews.
What's the matter now, Rodney? What's the matter?
You know, this time of year just reminds me to be grateful that I have good friends.
There you
like
go.
All you nice folks at Morning Stitch.
No.
You all have been great. Clutch gave me green peppers right out of his own bag. Just like I was his family. A lot of people don't talk to me.
They
move me in Boston. If my own people find me overbearing and annoying, hug and pushy and dumb, and they hate it when I sing. They really hate that.
Yeah.
I got punched a lot.
Oh, no.
So, thank you, Mark, man.
Okay.
Am I your friend?
Yeah, well, I'm your friend, buddy. I'm your friend.
Are you my friend?
Yeah, I am, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah, right back at you, buddy. You know, hey, look, hey, Lon, happy holidays, man.
That's Merry Christmas, Ethan. Oh. You were threatening a baby Jesus on my watch.
I got sucked in. I got sucked in.
Back off.
Oh,
this manger's not for you.
All right, well, look, you do whatever you got to do, Lon. Thanks for being with us.
God loves you. Deal with it.
Oh, man.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Very good.
Wow.
Very good. So, you know, Lawton, it's, you know, it's painful, but it's nice to have him. All right, so do we have our guest on the phone? Terrific. Now, this is interesting. Jimmy Massey is on the phone with us now. He's a former staff sergeant in the Marines. He witnessed the murders of many innocent Iraqi civilians during his tour. He's been a very vocal opponent of the war since his honorable discharge a year ago. And now he is he's going to be testifying, or he did testify on behalf of Jeremy Hinsman, the AWOL soldier who was applying for refugee status in Canada. God, can I talk today? Status in Canada. And we're going to talk to him about that. Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Jimmy.
Good, man. It's good to have you back on the show. So you testified last week at the refugee hearing of Jeremy Hinsman. Is that how you pronounce his name, Hinsman?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's the American who fled to Canada to escape a tour in Iraq. Now, because of the atrocities that he feels and that are obviously happening to Iraqi civilians. Tell us about your testimony. How did you get involved with this, and what did you say?
Basically, I just told the truth, of course, and gave the Canadian government a eyewitness account, basically step by step the process that we went through in Iraq.
And that was some of the stuff we talked about before, where you would shoot on cars, not knowing whether or not there were civilians in them if they didn't stop.
That's correct. Yes.
Uh-huh. And how did the audience or the people in the room up in Canada react to your testimony?
You know, the reactions that I've got is jaw-dropping to slanderous, he's a traitor. So it's kind of been a roundabout reaction that I've gotten.
Now, do you think that the Canadians are more responsive because they don't have troops in Iraq?
I think they are. And, you know, Canada is playing a key role right now in you know, the future upcoming Star Wars program that the Canadians, you know, are voting to be or wanting to be. I've heard so many different stories on the Star Wars program.
I don't think they are. They are participating in that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know President Bush is, you know, putting a lot of pressure on them, as well as Japan, to, you know, financially to provide some sort of support for this war. So Canada and Japan right now are getting really extreme high pressure from the government, and the Japanese government right now is trying to denounce their number 9, which you know, basically limits their self-defense force to, you know, humanitarian types of roles.
Mm-hmm.
So these countries are getting tremendous amounts of pressure, and if Canada opens up its borders to people like Jeremy, it's gonna cause a potential draft here in America. And if the Japanese get rid of their SDF and go with a full military, it's you know, so there's a lot of different political debates going on, you know, within other governments of how this war is playing out.
Jimmy Massey, what do you say to people who argue that deserters like Jeremy Hinsman should be severely punished?
I'd say first you'd have to walk a mile in Jeremy's shoes, then you'd have to walk a mile in my shoes, and, you know, listen to two testimonies and put them together. I think the people that are saying, you know, that I'm a traitor or he's a traitor are pretty miserable creatures and don't have an understanding of what it takes to have humanity towards mankind. And generally, the ones that I find that say stuff like that are the brainwashed evangelical Christians that watch the 700 Club every day.
Yeah. So let me just see, like, because obviously, you know, we just got a report today that the enlistment in the National Guard is down significantly. Clearly, there are problems with soldiers having the right equipment when they go there. Clearly, the reason we went into this war, you know, was questionable at best. It was based on a lie. So it seems to me that, you know, when people can't see those realities and they're just blinded by a type of patriotism that is so narrow-minded, it's disturbing and belligerent, that, you know, you're up against tremendous odds. Now, what I want to know, is what's the best thing that can happen out of this? What do you want to happen out of this?
I would like to see the American government admit its mistakes and end this war, end it in a quick, humane way, and allow countries that, Iraq feels that they can better support, you know, what they're trying to do within their country. And, let the Iraqis provide their democracy through the support of the UN and get other countries involved, because it's clear that we've already made way too many mistakes in Iraq that we need to pull out, because if not, we're just going to have a continued civil war. And then these companies that are building the new body armor for the vehicles can continue to rape our soldiers. And now all these war profiteers, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, they're making tons of money. So I think it's time to raise the bullcrap flag,
mm-hmm.
and get this war done and over with, and let the Iraqis decide who they want to rebuild their country.
Quick last, one little question. Do you believe that, you know, what we talked about with you before in terms of the type of situations where civilians are killed and often in some of the situations you talked about, sort of encouraged to shoot on, you know, vehicles that you have no idea who's in them, do you feel that is still going on?
Oh, sure. Definitely. The Marine Corps and the Army just changed their doctrines, too. Prior, we went into Iraq with a manual called the Small Wars Manual that was extremely outdated. And we went in with utilizing the SOPs, or the Standard Operating Procedures. Well, the military now has gotten slick and said, well, that's out of date and range, so we need to come up with a new one. And if you read these new SOPs, it's basically allowing, the soldier or Marine, no questions asked, if he fires into that vehicle, he has no responsibility. Once he, it's clear in an SOP now. So committing murder is okay now on the battlefield with this new SOP.
Jimmy, final quick question. You are out of the service now. Has your activism come back to haunt you in civilian life?
Sure. I live in a very remote, small area in the rural South, and I've taken a lot of heat, but also just in this area, I've gotten a lot of praise. So it's been a 50-50 split. I don't let those people bother me, because generally, those people are just full of hate and misery, and you can't talk to them. So. But I go off of what gives me guidance and strength is, the people that give me praise and encouragement. Because you definitely don't make any money by being an activist. You're extremely poor, and you live off of the good, and the graciousness of other people that feel the same way that you do.
All right, Jimmy. Is you think Jeremy's going to get his refugee status?
I wish I could answer that, but I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, this is such a political, game right now.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Thanks for joining us. Maybe we'll talk to you again. Jimmy Massey.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. If you want to pipe in on this issue, 866-303-2270. We're going to have a few minutes on the other side of this break for a few calls. If you want to talk about your views of desertion or about this type of activism, you can do that. If you want to talk about anything, you can call us, 866-303-2270. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thank you.
52 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Where?
That's a little MC5 for your arse. Huh?
Dig Kick it. Out the jam. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
You know what time it is now, dude? Do you know what time it is now?
52 past the hour?
Woo!
Oh, that time.
It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Thank you, Mark. Since this is the final live Dog of the Week for 2004, it was tempting to make it Dog of the Year. Of course, Bush would win that one hands down, yet the most compelling canine of this week stands very much alone. When a person's hedonistic love life takes up a week's worth of news headlines, it's time to praise the Lord and pass the milk bone. So it is with wannabe slash never was Homeland Security boss Bernie Kerik. Let's see now. He gives up the gig replacing Tom Ridge because he's got problems with an illegal immigrant nanny he might not have paid taxes for. Isn't it funny nobody knows her name or where she's from or who she is or
right.
if she's still in the country? Then the dam broke, and the nanny was the least of Bernie Kerik's problems. There are allegations about organized crime connections, personal bankruptcies, and the like, but that paled by comparison to revelations about Bernie Kerik's love life. The very married Kerik reportedly carried on not one but two affairs simultaneously. One was reportedly with a corrections officer, the other with publishing magnate Judith Reagan. And now, a slew of other questions have come up about Bernie. Did he use an apartment meant for rank-and-file cops after September 11th as a love nest? Did he use mob guys as contractors? Did he even fill out a background form when he became New York City's police commissioner in 2000? Who cares? We're talking about a guy who got more action than the average male porn star.
Yeah.
Bernie Kerik, you stud you. You are the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
That was a good one.
Hey.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze some of these calls in that I asked for. Brian in Everett, Washington, up early. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey there, calling from the passive-aggressive Puget Sound here.
All right.
I love
and
it.
We're all, you know, we're all victims of all the neocons out here, and we're all hating everyone because of it. So
mm-hmm.
happy Christmas to everybody. But here's what I think about this war concept and
okay.
the guy who deserted.
Sure.
Well, some people would say it's cowardly, but there's something that clicks in with some people with a higher reason or higher moral imperative. That you think, well, something's got, you know, there's going to be an answer for this in the end, like whether it's a metaphysical end or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really kind of, that kind of thinking is kind of like really illegal right now.
Right.
So
what you're saying is that this guy has a higher moral calling in terms of how he treats other human beings, no matter what race of people they are or what country
well,
they're from.
Well, it's just not American.
It's not American to think
well,
that way right
since,
now.
Ever since the founding framers set forth this restitutional constipation, we've had this battle. You know.
Sounds like you got a system worked out.
Nice work.
Yeah, okay, but you guys do keep up the good work.
Thank
All
you
right,
very
Brian.
Much. Nice talking to you. That was a... That's interesting. It's always the middle of the night callers that have the quirky things here.
What was that, constipation?
It was good. Whatever it was, I liked it. I'll have to listen to it again. Sharon in Florida, good morning.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay.
What's up?
I was looking at the numbers on the number of children killed in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
They say 46,000,
mm-hmm.
they're guessing. And if you extrapolate that to the United States, say if we were attacked by China or something,
mm-hmm.
that would be 273,765 of our children.
So you're saying if it was proportionate, if we were having an attack here that was proportionate to the Iraqi slaughter of civilian children, that's what we would be facing?
That's correct.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. And, thanks. You know, another question that needs to be asked is, why is everybody guessing? How come we don't know?
Thanks, Sharon.
Okay.
Yeah. But also to bring it home like she did with an equation is pretty
yeah,
profound. 270,000 if we were to do a proportionate number of people killed here, number of children. Just
an incredible carnage.
Steve in Madison, Wisconsin. Good morning.
Hi, Steve.
What's up, fellas?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Mr. Maron, I
yeah.
saw you on Conan last night. You look great.
Thanks, man.
You did a great job. Great duds, I got to tell you.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Myself, I'm red-green colorblind, so I have to choose from the same color scheme, because if I don't, you know, I look like the Partridge Family bus. You know, and I'm really thin, so I'm not as wide as a bus, so I just confuse people when they look at me. It's awful. But
yeah,
I got to tell you, your bit on drugs and liberals,
yeah,
dude, I've been thinking that for weeks.
Yeah.
I'm a chronic insomniac,
uh-huh.
and thanks to you guys,
yeah.
I'm up and way early in the morning, past my bedtime. But
Well, there's something to be thought about. I mean, you know, it's interesting that you're saying that because, like, I got a few emails this morning from people who were watching who, you know, some people are like, you're really funny. The other people are like, man, I think that's true. And, you know, there's part of me, I really do think that's true.
Well, there's a little bit in me that's very frightened, like a little child who's sucking his thumb that maybe thinks it is true.
Yeah.
but the fact of the matter is, you know, I really do think, you know, I was on Ambien for like 2 years in a row, my friend, and I just stopped.
Why? Why'd you stop?
Well, because I started making decisions that had nothing to do with what I perceive as reality, which, by the way, you know, is all...
Yeah. It's okay. You back? You there?
No, he's not there.
He's gone?
He's gone.
We had a loser.
Happy holidays in Madison, though.
Sorry, Steve. Generally on the radio, we got to lose the... He said a bad
word. He said, yeah. Well, hey.
But I want to talk about that. I'll talk about Conan and what I talked about over the top of the hour, because I do think there's some credibility in it. And thanks for calling, Steve.
And you know what else we got coming up in the next hour?
What?
The deep, dark secrets of morning sedition.
Oh, we're going to have all the guys in here.
All the guys are going to hear. We're going to spill it.
Yeah.
Okay. Spill it.
Not too much.
Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, people who celebrate anything this week. Whatever you're doing out there, you know, we're leaving today. This is our day before vacation. But I do want to encourage everyone to hang out here at Morning Sedition while we're gone, because we did put a lot of work into doing a lot of extra interviews, into compiling more than just standard best of shows. We've got a lot of back-to-back comedy on the shows. We've got a bunch of new interviews. We've got some stuff you've heard before, but you know, it's still going to be. You know, we definitely put in the work to make it enjoyable while we're gone, and sort of create an illusion that we were still here, Mark Riley.
And you better enjoy it, you people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Smack them around. Look at that.
So I'm going on vacation. They can't touch me.
I will be I'm going out to L.A. It's weird that I'm just going to be on vacation at home. Someone just got – I got an email. I guess there's some part of my being floating around on VH1 out there. I haven't seen it. It's weird how little of myself I see on television when it happens. There was some Jewish comedy thing that I did that was on the other night on Comedy Central, and then there was this VH1 thing. They did this thing of, I don't know what's the new VH1 show. Do any of you know? The Coolest Year or something like that. Yeah, I did this whole thing on high school confessions, all about, I must have talked to them for like 3 hours. I have no idea what we're using. Some woman comes up to me. I'm at a restaurant having something to eat. The waitress is like, were you on that VH1 Coolest Year thing? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, I heard about your first time having sex, and it was, I thought it was really candid and interesting. And I'm like, oh, wow, I forgot I talked about that. So, like, here I am, like, it's same with the radio audience. I am too candid, Riley. I got to hide some stuff. I need a little mystique, man. I got to put a layer of, I got to put a veneer on, buddy. There's people walking around that know me really well.
Share the fantasy.
I got nothing. I got nothing to hide. I mean, a couple of things, but.
It all out there already.
We'll get to them. Yeah.
And you've repeated it for people that haven't heard about them already.
Yeah, so I have no shame either.
Well, you know, want to make sure everybody knows, fully informed.
Well, I don't know.
It's our job here.
I walk through the world as me, and that's the only thing that I can really bank on. Is I know that point of view. I know, you know what I mean? Hey, I'm very familiar with me walking through the world, but, you know, it's great to be amongst the people. What, you know that caller who crapped out on us there because he said a curse word. It was interesting because he was talking about this thing, the theory. I did Conan last night, and you know, I've done Conan a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of material I wanted to do because now, you know, I have a dual role. Is that, you know, I used to just go on there as a comic and be crazy me, and now, you know, I'm a comic, but I, you know, I'm the host of Morning Sedition.
Mm-hmm.
Here with you, Riley, on Air America Radio. And it's interesting that how loaded that really is, because, you know, I can no longer, you know, go be introduced like that and have people not know what's going to go on, where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
On some level, there's a prejudgment factor now. Like, you know, Mark Maron, the host of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, I know that at least 30% of the audience, depending where I am, is like, oh, he's one of them. You know, which it's kind of a weird position for me to be in. It's a new position for me to be in because I used to be able to ride a fence, you know.
One of them being an L word?
Well, it's just like, you know, whatever people think or whatever, you know, propaganda they're buying or whatever. You know, once I start talking, you know, and they get to know me, I'm still, you know, it's not a handicap per se, but I used to like to sneak in under the radar and then, you know, come in and punch them from the inside. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? Is this guy screwing with our heads? Yes, I am.
The Trojan horse kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. As far as the Trojan horse into the psyche.
You know, and now Air America Radio has blown your Trojan horse for you.
Well, I don't mind it, you know, but I want to live up to my responsibility as a radio show host for this network, and I had a couple of bits that I wanted to do, and they decided that, you know, we would do the other bits, you know, because you go over this stuff with a segment producer, you know.
Censorship? Are you talking about censorship?
But that's what I was saying. No, it wasn't, ultimately. Is that, you know, I've been working with these guys for years, mm-hmm. you know, and I had a bunch of material, you know, that I wanted to do. And it was good material. It was a little heavy on the politics. So what they did, you know, here my first instinct is like, well, because I was all excited to do it because I wanted to do this new this evolution bit about people at evolution. And then, you know, I got the segment producer, the guy I work with all the time, laughing. He laughed through the whole thing. It's very interesting to have to do your act to the guy on the phone. And then he calls me back and says, you know, we need a few more things because, you know, we're not going to do this thing, we're not going to do that thing. So I'm like, well, what do you mean? Why aren't you going to do that? And he's like, we're just not going to do it. You know, I'm like, but it's funny. He's like, look, you know, you got other stuff. You know, let's just be funny. And I'm like, and then I started fester about it. But it turns out, like, a lot of times, it's not so much censorship because the stuff I did get through was not easy stuff. But it's like, what's going to best characterize me and what's going to get laughs, you know, with their audience? Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes that simple. Because the bit I did do about, you know, about depression, about medication, about the idea that, that they've been medicating the left because Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush were both CEOs of pharmaceutical companies, it would be very easy to make liberalism, an ailment that has symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, you could just like, you know, are you overly sensitive? Yeah, I am. Do you care too much about people you don't know? I do a bit. Do you get, you know, existential despair because of the injustice in the world? Oh, my God, I do. Well, you might be suffering from liberalism. Try Democritol. You know, it'll make you feel like the system is working for everyone.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and it got a big laugh and everything. But what this guy who called us was saying, and that's, you know, and that's highly political, but it's the way I do it, you know, without, you know, being, because their concern is that if you're too partisan and you come from too much one side, it'll put the whole show in that position, and then they have to react to that, and it's better that I just, you know, be who I am, be the crazy sort of paranoid, manic person that I am, and, you know, and have the relationship that Conan have had over the years, but I still got all this stuff in. So it's just that, you know, my first response is like, oh, man, maybe I'm being censored, but it doesn't really turn out that way when you've been working with somebody for as long as I've been working with that show.
Now, that means they don't have guys like P.J. O'Rourke on too often, right?
Well, they have Franken on, they have P.J. O'Rourke on, but the thing is that, you know, you've got to be able to play off the host, you know, if, mm-hmm. unless you're going to, you know, drop a bomb, you know what I mean, and not want to be on that show again on some level. So I guess on some level that might be seen as censorship, or it might be just seen as, you know, playing, you know, meeting someone halfway and working together on something.
But now, did they do this before in your previous appearances on Conan?
They always do it. It's not about censorship. It's just like it really comes down to just because what I'm saying is just because I am on Air America Radio now, I've gotten hypersensitive. Sure, they've said it before. They say, you know, let's not do this bit. I'm like, when you're a comic, you get very married to bits. You know what I mean? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I think you got better stuff. And at some point, you got to trust the guy. I've known him for years, and yeah, I think he was right because okay. it kicked butt last night. But what our caller was saying was just that, you know, maybe it was true, and there's some part of me that certainly believes almost everything I say is relatively true. I just, you know, I can't spend too much time in it or I go crazy. Every day we talk about news stories that reflect the crappy job President Bush is doing and just how rapidly our world is swirling down the crapper. Despite the fact that we have 3 hours every day, we can't do it all. So here's a quick rundown of just some of the stories we weren't able to get to today, representing just a partial 24-hour snapshot of the Bush storm. Associated Press headline, Earth Hostile Chemical Gets White House Okay. The Bush administration has decided to let American agribusinesses to use methyl bromide on tomatoes, strawberries, and other crops. How can that be good? How can anything with the word methyl bromide, how could that possibly be good? Can I have that on my sandwich, please? Methyl bromide is an ozone-depleting pesticide that had been scheduled for a phase-out next year around the world. Did you spread some of that methyl bromide? Do you have the spread, methyl bromide?
Right.
Washington Press, Washington Post headline. Lott joins Republican critics of Rumsfeld. Former Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott joining a growing number of Republicans, politicians critical of the Defense Secretary's performance. Senator Lott said he would like to see Rumsfeld go in the next year. Preferably before the invasion of Iran.
Go where?
I added that. Wait, where do you mean? Back to the private sector. Maybe you can run a pharmaceutical company again. They're making lists. They're working the numbers. They know what's going on. They know how to, you know, to screw with us.
I know, but Rumsfeld ain't going anyplace.
Washington Post headline at Guantanamo, a prison without a prison. Within a prison within a prison. Military officials say that somewhere inside the Guantanamo holding facility, the CIA has been operating a secret prison that has never been mentioned in public until now. And never will be again. Washington Post headline. In policy proposals, Bush offers dueling views on economy. During his two-day policy summit, President Bush promised that making his tax cuts permanent will return the nation to a position of financial strength, but also warned that the nation's financial outlook is so bleak that Social Security will inevitably collapse and people injured by big business should be limited in their ability to sue. And we are going to talk about that in detail when we come back. That is tort reform, i.e. restricting victims' rights. 16 past the hour, almost right now, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition. That's right. Air America Radio. Right now, for some reason, Raymond came in a Confederate soldier outfit with a rebel flag. Real nice.
Real nice.
All right, but he did give us Zell Miller's Palm Pilot for today. 6 a.m., breakfast, scream at toast. Tell it, I wish we were lived in a time when I could challenge you to a duel. 8 a.m. Rehearse for upcoming Fox News. I just like doing the voice. I'm not supposed to. Rehearse for upcoming Fox News reports. Note, must remove trace elements of truth from my speech. I'll show O'Reilly how it's done. 10 a.m. Rehearse speech at the American Conservative Union, giving Courage Under Fire Award to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Sample, like you, I knew what it was like to fight for my country. Like you, I knew what it was like to have my views criticized. Like you, I knew what it was like to sit in a stall screaming for an hour at a toilet roll. Patriots, I salute you. 1 p.m. Fashion my spit into balls, send to our troops in Iraq. Note, couldn't hurt. 3 p.m. Give press conference praising President Jefferson Davis. Or Jefferson Bush, or, you know, Jefferson W. Bush, you know, Junior. 5 p.m., watch Foghorn Leghorn cartoons for linguistic tips. Practice this line. I say, fortunately, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an emergency. All right, let's get to the real stuff. All right, first of all, at the economic conference, the big topic today for us here on this show is the desire for tort reform, or as we call it, restricting victims' rights. You understand, if they put caps on the lawsuits that victims of corporate crime can draw against corporations, then they can run. They can just add those caps and the amount of money that they can be sued for into their bottom line and never make the changes that need to be made when somebody is hurt or killed or poisoned or hundreds of people have killed, you know, and lawsuits are drawn to buckle that corporation so it behaves properly and safeguards whatever needs to be safeguarded in their product line. Like, for instance, this has happened time after time. Like children severely burned by highly flammable pajamas many years ago. Regal Textile aware of hazard, but chose not to treat pajamas with flame retardant chemicals. All right, and $1 million punitive award forces unsafe product off the market. Now, if that cap was at $200,000 and they said we can afford any lawsuits to come at us, why would they change? If it was cheaper to keep it going, women dying from toxic shock syndrome after using superabsorbent tampons. Playtex willfully disregarded studies and medical reports linking product to toxic shock. Deadly product was removed from the market after a $10 million punitive award. Tylenol Tums toxic, destroying liver when mixed with alcohol. Johnson & Johnson knew about it, okay? An $8.8 million award spurs company to put warnings on its products, all right? a defect. How about this? The Pinto. You remember the Pinto?
Yeah.
The Ford Pinto?
Absolutely.
Just like how many people were killed during that thing? A lot. Consumers injured when poorly designed Pinto burst into flames upon impact. Ford knew how to design cars safely, but chose profit over American lives. Vehicle was redesigned only after a manufacturer hit it with a $125 million punitive award. Asbestos, another example. Now, if none of these were allowed to happen, if there were tort reforms or caps put on these lawsuits, why would companies that care about money over people change anything? And then you have at this economic conference, the economic expo or whatever you want to call it, the big conference in D.C., you got Home Depot CEO Robert Nardelli and President Bush choking, having some laughs, kicking it around about trial lawyers. Apparently Nardelli said, what you have today is business on one side, and you've got the trial lawyers on the other side. You've got deep pockets colliding with shallow principles. That's hilarious. Yeah. So, you know, they're sitting around joking about this stuff, right? And Home Depot, you know, has been sued. It has been sued before. Home Depot, Santa Monica, California, November 1999, Mary Margaret Pentorf was hit by a 75-pound box of wood that fell from a shelf 20 feet above her, and she bled to death on the floor with a fatal head wound. Twin Falls, Idaho, May 2000. 2,000 pounds of kitchen countertops fell about 10 feet from a forklift that was moving them, crushing a 3-year-old, Janessa Horner. She died 4 hours later at the local hospital. Are they laughing about that? Are they laughing that these they want to make these people unable to seek victims' justice for a type of carelessness that exists at many stores? There were hundreds of lawsuits drawn against Home Depot.
Cost of doing business.
Yeah, right. That's all. Right? That's what they think.
Yep.
Danbury, Connecticut, 41-year-old Jerry Mead and his brother were hit by 2,000 pounds of falling landscape timbers. Jerry was killed. His brother was seriously injured. I wonder if Nardelli was popping that shot at the big economic conference against for pro restricting victims' rights. What do you think, Riley?
These folks, all of these corporate mavens that are in charge and that were participants in this Bush Economic Summit, all have the same goal in mind, unfettered profits. Whatever stands in their way, whether it's lawyers or politicians or Democratic congresspeople or whatever, they are about moving them out of the way, and Bush has an agenda that would move them out of
people
the way.
Are vulnerable. You know what I mean? We assume things. We shouldn't, but we do. You know, but we should assume that this country, you know, is safeguarded. We are you know, a progressive in terms of like hygiene and safety. You know, we're supposed to believe in America. We're not supposed to believe that the FDA, the USDA, the EPA has all been pimped out by lobbyists and corporations and corporate interests. We're not supposed to, you know, we're not supposed to you know, be afraid of not, you know, getting justice if we are hurt in these situations because we have a government that's more sympathetic with corporate interests than they are with people. And I'm a sucker. You know, I want to believe things. I had an exterminator come to my house the other day.
And?
Spray for roaches.
And?
It's a racket. You know, they spray for roaches, it costs you $100. Then they say if you get it every month, it only costs you $30.
But if you wait a few months,
you got to pay $100 again. But I say he's spraying it all over everything in my kitchen. He goes, is this safe? Is it going to hurt me? No, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you at all. I'm like, okay, you sure? Yeah, no problem. But do you got dogs? What does that mean?
You'll kill a dog.
Yeah, exactly. I said, no, I got cats. He goes, yeah, the cats don't bother. But what about me? It's on my dishes.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, call us in a month if you want to get it for $30.
Yeah, watch all the roach legs that end up all over everything.
They're all over everything.
Yes.
What do we got?
We got some behind-the-scenes things coming up.
We're
going
to have everybody come in. We're going to talk about our year here at Air America. PW and Dan and Kent and Jonathan and Kayla's already here. We're going to chat.
That's right. Secrets of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And Riley and I are going on vacation today, so is Jonathan Clutch Larson. He's going to be gone for 2 weeks. That means he's going to miss New Year's. Pashman, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, is going on vacation today as well, but you're not going anywhere but to Brooklyn?
I'm going to New York City after sundown.
It's a magical place that I never get to go to when I'm working.
Brendan, P.W. McDonald, you're going to be here for this week because you had last week off.
Yeah, same. Well, I'm not working, though. I'll just not be going on vacation.
Just going to hang out with the fiancé.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's working, so I get to just laugh.
I know. Isn't that wild that we're all, you know, all we look forward to is just sort of like not waking up in the middle of the night? So, okay, let's get this straight. You're not going to be here for New Year's. P.W. is going to be filling in for Clutch over New Year's, and you're going to be here. Mark Riley going to be gone New Year's.
That's right.
So let's reflect. It hasn't been a year, but we've been here since May or April 1st.
April 2nd, actually.
Man, has it been a process and an exciting. It was the 1st of April. It was a different world back then. And I want to say something from a guy who, this is me, speaking for me, working by myself for as long as I have and not really being able to work with other people because nothing, fortunately, that I did with other people lasted as long as this has. And I know it's been difficult.
There may be some connection there.
Wait. Hold up for a second now.
Well, I'm about to say something nice.
Okay, be right. Nice.
It's been a great experience for me so far, and I know that I'm not easy, and it's gotten a lot better. And I think that I certainly would never have been able to pull this show together without, you know, everybody who's in this room right now, because no one else is up, and
nobody is true.
Sometimes the people at the network are like, "Do you guys work here?" Yeah, we're the morning crew. So everything that you hear that comes out on the air is solely because of the work that we do as an ensemble here. And I tell you, I get emotional about it. I am like. I didn't think I was capable of having as good a time as I have had at work. I mean, we laugh every day, no matter how horrendous things are. And if you think that's a bad thing, you got to be crazy, and you ought to lighten up.
Absolutely.
But I just, you know, it's just...
But you've got the date wrong. The launch party was the 31st.
Right.
Franken was on the 1st.
Right, but no,
we started on the 2nd.
Franken launched the 31st of March because they had to launch in the first fiscal quarter, but we can probably move on, actually.
Yeah.
You don't get hung up. April Fool's Day was our first day on the air, and we
didn't
show
this again as the senior producer. Let's move on.
So, but that's what I want to say. Also, I want to say I'm sorry. Because I know, sometimes.
Whatever could that apology be for, Mark?
I used to have to do it every day. So now I'm offering a pre-New Year sort of like I know I've been difficult off the mic.
If anyone has any doubts, there's a documentary coming out. I'm actually not kidding. There really is. I'm told it's going to be airing on HBO. Again, I'm not kidding. And apparently, Marin is. One of the big stars of the documentary.
The Marin Meltdown. It was like there wasn't even a studio set up. It was just me and Larson in a room. He's going, okay, here's the topic. And I'm like, what? What do you mean here's the topic?
Yeah, can I tell a quick story about one of the first few days that we were on the air here? I don't even think we were on the air now that I think back to this story.
Rehearsal?
This was rehearsal week. Folks might not know that we actually had to go through several rehearsals. You
might not have been able to tell.
More to the point, we only had a few rehearsals.
A few rehearsals, right. I mean, it was a bit of a rush job. And I can remember the way we used to have to meticulously set up the show because we didn't really have any experience as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was kind of plotted out, and it might have been a little overwhelming for Mark Maron, who, as he just said, never really had a steady day-to-day job. And
where's this
got
going?
Hit. I remember him getting hit with a pile of papers. About the second day we were doing rehearsal, and he's sitting in the room and just kind of like that sweaty glazed look on his face. And I remember I walked in with something else. I was told to give it to him, too. And I walked in with it, and he goes, "What's this? What is this?" And you have to read this for the story that you have to... "That's it, I'm done! I'm sick of this already! I can't take this job anymore!"
Oh, no.
A harbinger.
Before we went on the air.
Right. Yeah. A harbinger of things to come.
Oh, come on. But it's been so good lately.
I will say, in Marin's defense, that the number of meltdowns has been decreasing at a steady rate since we launched, and the quality of the show has been increasing at a steady rate as well.
Oh, I tell you, man, it's like I initially, like when we all first met each other, we were all just sort of looking at each other going, oh, what's this? What's going to happen here? You know what I mean? And I didn't have any idea how to do any of this, you know, work with people or do radio or anything else or, you know, homework. homework. What is that about? Here are your papers. What are you doing? But me and Larson used to fight a lot, but I used to think it added to the show.
Actually,
but
you fight it.
No, I'm not going to dismiss you from. You have your own tactics. I know what's going on.
Here we go.
I'm not going to play games.
Maren, there were a couple of weeks there where you would have to send out mass emails apologizing.
That was right. That was true. I used to have to DCC. I used to have to copy everybody. Like, I'm sorry about yesterday when I left the studio and yelled at the wall.
Once you had a form letter made up for that, I think.
Oh my God.
It feels like a million years ago, though.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
So let's talk about the good things. Come on. No. That's awful.
I mean, the show rocks.
Yeah.
That's right. A good thing.
There was a turning point that I specifically remember. Hmm. Was there was a day, the day that Reagan, well, not the day he died,
right.
But it was the first Monday we were back.
Right.
And we didn't really have a structure to covering the actual stories of Reagan's death, but it was generally a through line
right.
throughout the show and a real theme.
Yeah.
And there was just something very visceral about both of your reactions to that day that must have come from a festering liberal cockle of your heart.
Well, what happened,
so
if you remember, there was talk around here that, you know, we were supposed to handle this with a certain amount of decorum.
Right.
And I said to Larson, I said, there's no way. This guy is the evilest bastard of all. He's the great Satan of the Republicans, and we're not going to handle this with any decorum whatsoever.
Yeah, yep. My feeling about that was sort of my instinct, especially since I sort of came from mainstream news, was, you know, the guy's dead. We talk honestly about the bad things, but
yeah.
we sort of keep it in perspective and try to be respectful of the fact that a man had died. But what sort of turned it for me was the fact that no one else was even talking about all the awful things he did to this country.
He had no NPR, nobody.
Right, which
no.
meant that it seemed to me that it was almost a responsibility for us to just go whole hog on that, so that in the media ether there was at least some sense of balance to
that
it.
Was a great day.
Well, they canonized for God's sake.
I still remember we came back from break at one point in that day. It was a Monday. He died over the weekend. And we came back, and the music's playing. It's, you know, Mark Maron, 34 past the hour. You just go, Dead Reagan Monday.
Like that was kind of a turning point, yeah.
So there were some other turning points, by the way.
Yeah, like, what do you got, Kayla?
Oh, I don't know. You know, there was one day.
He just looked at me.
Well, there was one day where, like, it felt like just a whole lot of weight was taken off of all of our shoulders. And the show just really came to its own.
Was it a British weight?
Oh. It could have been.
Oh, I didn't think anybody was going to go there.
I think you have to go back in the archives, check. I don't know. I'll take a date at random, June 23rd, 2004, and listen to that show, and, you know, maybe you can find it.
No, we didn't know what was going to happen. It was like, you know, Air America had put a lot of us together without knowing, you know, how it would really pan out. You know, it was a lot of people in the studio, and the vibe just didn't, there was not gelling going on. Sue Ellicott was supposed to move on to do some reporting. I haven't heard from her, and I don't know that she showed up on the network again, but she's out there. I see her on TV occasionally.
I think Chris is the one who's really done the best job of keeping in touch with her.
I miss Sue being here for a very specific reason. When I was on vacation this past week, I was with my family, my mother, my sister-in-law, my wife-to-be, and we were having a nice family dinner, and I was a sailor. Like, the expletives coming out of my mouth were appalling. Like, I think, like, Kinnison came out of the grave and said, you can't say that. And I, in the middle of saying one very terrible word that I tossed off with such casual elegance, I turned to my family and I said, yeah, I don't work with women. And we are the most foul-mouthed bunch of hooligans that ever got up at 3 in the morning to come
to work. You're sitting at a dinner table, forks frozen, half-killed, you know, and you're like, what?
There are waiters over-pouring glasses and just flowing out of the floor.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll get Kent the Colonel Jones in here since we're on the funny end of our reflection.
Yeah.
And we'll continue this conversation with the crew. It's Air America Radio. It's 44 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
29 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. Also in the room, Jonathan Klutz Larson, Dan Passman, son of Lewis and Linda Passman of New Jersey, Brendan P.W. McDonald, Kent the Colonel Jones, Kalo on the board. We're all here. And I just want to say, from me, and most likely from all of us, you know, you people who are listening have been great. All the emails, bad and good, have been great. Even, even the ones that really upset me were great.
You're being awful magnanimous, aren't you?
Dude, it drives me, man. I hate to say, in the being a blog bitch that I was, thank God I'm in blog bitch recovery. I am in blogging on. But
even
hi, Mark. Lars has been. But anyways, even you guys have been great, even when it hurt. You know, in a lot of ways, you know, my insanity around this stuff. It was all part of the process of learning how to have an audience, how to talk to an audience on a daily basis. You know, in a consistent way. And you know, in radio, it's hard to know how you're doing. You know, it's not like TV. And we just we got some news yesterday.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, we got some great news yesterday. The ratings for Morning Sedition continue to increase. We had our best month ever last month. And, we're meeting and exceeding every goal we had for expanding our listenership and getting Morning Sedition out there. So spread the word. Tell your friends to screw those other people who have morning shows that are far inferior and come over to Morning Sedition. I know morning routines are really they're carved in concrete. It's hard to get people to change their morning routine.
Yeah.
But once you change your routine to Morning Sedition, you're not likely to go back.
Right. And from once you go back.
Yeah. And from what I understand, I've heard that there's going to be some publicity. Is that... Oh. Did anyone else?
No, that was just a joke.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that's what we're doing now. There have been some ads. Nation, Mother Jones. There have been some ads.
That's right.
There was sending us out on the road a bit more. We just went to Boston. That was great.
Kent Jones. Kent Jones showing up for the live show in Boston steps up and does a little performing himself. That was great.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for everybody in Boston for coming out. That was great for all of us.
It was a lot of fun.
Hopefully,
fun
time.
I think we're going to Florida, hopefully, in January sometime.
That would work.
Let's move.
Is that a week? Worth of shows?
I think pencil, folks. Pencil.
Oh.
I'd love to go
Light pencil.
What are you doing over the vacation, Ken? Are you off this week?
I will be staying in New York City with my wife and my dog. Over the holidays, some people are coming into town, and we're going to have a quiet, low-key Christmas, I think.
That's nice, man.
Yes.
And, Kalo, me and you and Kent, hopefully, when Riley's gone, we're going to talk to the Museum of Modern Art people, and we're going to get a curator to walk us around. What was Gelman doing? Did you tell him to come in? Why didn't he should have come in?
Well, he may be doing a newscast for 12 other stations.
Yes. Oh, he's running around doing double time because of that woman is out. So, Larson, what are you jotting down there? You got things you need to talk about?
I just was making a note to myself that the thing that really sort of keeps me going, or kept me going, I should say, when it was really tough, it was grueling for so many reasons. We were all learning.
Okay, I get it.
When we were on the north face of K2,
yeah, there you go.
When my nose fell off from frostbite.
No,
what really is just an amazing sort of motivator for me is every once in a while we'll get an email from someone, someone out there, wherever they may be. So, more often than not, it's someone who lives in a community where they think they're the only person who thinks like they do.
Yeah.
And we would get this email, and it would just say, I listen to you guys driving to work, and you keep me going.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm actually literally getting chills just now thinking about it. And to think that we're connecting that way with someone, with how many people out there.
Yeah.
And having that effect on their lives so that they can get to their work or wherever they're going with a smile on their face because they were laughing at something you were doing or just a sense of, yes, I'm not alone.
Right.
That's an amazingly powerful thing.
I used to be that guy. I was seriously, I used to do a truck run for Nabisco. And I,
really?
Oh, wow.
I hated it. And I used to just be in my car every morning.
Miserable
driving
with there. A truckload of cookies?
Yeah, right?
Well, aside from the whole cookie part, it was still a crappy job.
Yeah.
And no offense to RJR Nabisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember listening to morning radio every day and would time my trip that if for some reason I got through a traffic light a little more quickly in that, I would slow down or sit in a parking lot because I had to have my hour of morning radio was what helped me out. And so to be a part of that now And, you know, we really do feel like a morning team here. So, you know, that's great. I personally take great pride in that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'll second that. I have an email still hanging up in my refrigerator from actually the first montage I ever put together right after the Democratic Convention. We got an email.
The famous Kerry Bruce montage?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. And a woman wrote in and said, you know, it brought tears to her eyes hearing it and knowing that only 4 months ago, it would not have even been possible to hear something like that on the radio that brought tears to her eyes, you know. So I totally agree. The vast majority of the emails we get are so supportive. I will, though, disagree with one thing you said. The emails that we get that say that we're doing something wrong,
yeah,
I just ignore those. I don't even read the email or the blog. I don't care what they say. As far as I'm concerned.
That blog is morningsedition.com.
There you go. Make sure you get that in.
Well, it has a speedball effect on me, Dan. You have to understand.
Know.
It's like I'm sitting there going, good one. Oh, there's a good one. Oh, there's a good one. And then somebody will just write two sentences that are so precise, and they just punch me in the heart. I'm like, oh, yeah, dopamine. Oh, why am I such a bad man?
Uh-oh.
Maren, I've actually seen you come in and turn to Larson and be like, hey, you got any hate for me?
Bring on the hate. So, Riley, what are you thinking, man? What are some of your reflections? Anything?
I don't hate white people anymore.
Wow.
I just want to know how long did that take.
Let me see. 30 years? Oh, no. Only kidding. No, actually, for me, this entire experience can be summed up in 3 words. Poontang to you.
Yeah.
I'm not going any further than that.
Because you're already in Riley Town.
Hey!
It's Christmas in Riley Town.
I just want to say before the train stops,
yeah.
You know, in addition to obviously the listeners keeping us going, you know, we've had a lot of support, maybe not as much as we always wanted from the higher ups here, and mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, that when we've gone to them, they've at least tried to do what we needed them to do. But more to the point, you guys have been just amazing in terms of the level of the passion and the dedication of this show. When we first started on the air, there was like a rotating crop of writers for all the shows, and Kent stepped up and said, you know what, I will come in at 5 o'clock every morning, every day, forever, to be your guy on this show. And that was a big turning point for us.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Let me... this has been a wonderful experience. Mark, your dedication, you're a great, funny guy, and I feel very honored to do that. And how much fun is it to have Mark Riley on the air in 41 markets?
Oh, my God.
How good is that?
I do have to say one thing that I actually never thought I would say on the air,
yeah.
Which is, Chris, could you hit the liberal agenda button?
Oh, yeah. Broke the illusion. Now everyone's going to know it's not a real fax machine.
Whoa.
Here's the liberal agenda for our final show before the Christmas holidays. It's from the Streisand compound, Northern Machine, or that thing that he just pressed. Call Rob Reiner. Pitch this idea. Dick Cheney is Scrooge with puppets.
Oh!
Replace door-to-door caroling with door-to-door Chomsky.
Oh!
I guess it's dice day. 3. Arrange the light display on your roof to read, Mandate My Ass.
Oh!
All right. 4. Watch It's a Wonderful Life and then wonder what would it be like if George W. Bush had never been born.
Oh!
5. Today's phrase is drop it in the conversation. Yeah, kid, democracy's nearly dead. We have a madman in office and global warming's going to destroy us all in 5 years. But, hey, enjoy your My Little Pony celebration castle. Wake up, kid. Time is running out, man.
Oh!
Happy holidays, Dad.